The sun was worshipped in so many pagan societies as a divinity, but not in Jerusalem. And a woman, a queen, who had embraced Jerusalem's faith, honored the temple of Jerusalem's God so that the sun's light glorified it and the religion it proclaimed. Welcome to Jerusalem 365, episode 76, The Convert Queen. I'm Meir Soloveitchik. In Israel, archaeological discoveries can be made anywhere. This is especially true of Jerusalem, and even more so of the area in Jerusalem known as Ir David, the city of David. It is therefore no source of surprise that archaeologists in that area uncovered a palace in a parking lot. Thus did the Associated Press report, quote, Israeli archaeologists digging in an East Jerusalem parking lot have uncovered a 2,000-year-old mansion they believe likely belonged to Queen Helene of Adiabene, a minor but exceptional character in the city's history. The remains of the building were unearthed just outside the walls of Jerusalem's old city, underneath layers of later settlement that were themselves hidden until recently, under the asphalt of a small parking lot. End quote. As the article and others further explains, to find a large, elaborate building containing its own storehouses for food and its own ritual baths for private immersions is striking in that area, for these features belong to mansions made, usually, in the area of Jerusalem known as the Upper City, where those of wealth lived. The Lower City, the site of the original Jerusalem, was for the first century CE a poorer neighborhood. But as the AP piece further notes, quote, the contemporary Jewish historian Josephus Flavius, who penned detailed descriptions of Jerusalem, mentions only one wealthy family that lived there, the family of Queen Helene. According to Josephus in Jewish texts, the AP article continues, Helene was from a royal clan that ruled Adiabene, a region now in northern Iraq. Along with her family, she converted to Judaism and came to Jerusalem in the first half of the first century AD. Helene merited grateful mention in the Mishnah, the written version of Judaism's oral tradition, where she is praised for her generosity to Jerusalem's poor and for making contributions to the Second Temple, the center of the Jewish faith, which was just a few hundred meters, yards, uphill from her house. She was buried in an elaborate tomb, not far away. Today, there is a downtown Jerusalem street named for her. There is a high probability that the mansion belonged to Helene's family, simply because no other building comes close to matching the historical description, Israel Antiquities Authority archaeologist Doron Ben-Ami said at a news conference announcing the discovery Wednesday. Built when Jerusalem was capital of the Roman-ruled territory of Judea, the building was destroyed along with the temple and the rest of the city when Roman legions quelled a Jewish revolt nearly 2,000 years ago, he said. End quote. So the AP article tells us. It is a wonderful discovery, a remnant of a remarkable royal woman who embraced the faith of the Jews to the extent that she journeyed from her own land to live in the sacred city of Jerusalem, and not in the neighborhood of Jerusalem where those of parallel wealth to her lived, but rather where David once walked. To encounter the story of this queen is to discover one of the most interesting individuals of that era, one who made a lasting impression on the temple so long as it still stood, and a lasting impression on the rabbinic mind and heart to this very day. While there are many mentions made of Queen Helene or Helena in the Mishnah and the Talmud, a more elaborate account is given of her story by Josephus. Queen Helene of Adiabene, a kingdom found in what is now the Kurdish area of Iraq, was married to a king known as Munbaz or Monabazus. The kingship, following her husband's death, was initially given to her elder son, Monabazus II, who then in turn transferred the kingship, according to Josephus, to the elder king's favorite son, Izates. The queen and her sons seem to have embraced Judaism due to Jews in her region, though fascinatingly, also according to Josephus, Izates had been asked not to circumcise himself in order to not publicly separate from the pagan practices of his people. Or as Josephus puts it, quote, when he perceived that his mother was highly pleased with the Jewish customs, he made haste to change and to embrace them entirely. And as he supposed that he could not be thoroughly a Jew unless he were circumcised, he was ready to have it done. But when his mother understood what he was about, she endeavored to hinder him from doing it, and said to him that this thing would bring him into danger, and that as he was a king, he would thereby bring himself into great odium among his subjects, when they should understand that he was so fond of rites that were to them strange and foreign, and that they would never bear to be ruled over by a Jew. This it was that she said to him, and for the present persuaded him to forbear. End quote. And yet, Josephus continues, Izates' desire to embrace Judaism was in the end too strong for purported prudence, and he went ahead with the ritual, shocking members of his court. Yet in the end, his kingship went unharmed. Josephus further writes, quote, upon which they were presently struck with astonishment and fear, and that to a great degree, lest the thing should be openly discovered and censured, and the king should hazard the loss of his kingdom, while his subjects would not bear to be governed by a man who was so zealous in another religion, and lest they should themselves run some hazard, because they would be supposed the occasion of his so doing. But it was God himself who hindered what they feared from taking effect, for he preserved both Izates himself and his sons when they fell into many dangers, and procured their deliverance when it seemed to be impossible, and demonstrated thereby that the fruit of piety does not perish as to those who have regard to him and fix their faith upon him only. End quote. Thus did a queen and her sons, who lived far away from Jerusalem, but not far from the birthplace of Abraham, embrace the faith of Abraham. And even more amazingly, just as Abraham, called by God, journeyed from what is now Iraq to the Holy Land, so too did this royal family also feel called by God to take a similar journey. Thus Josephus writes, quote, but as to Helena, the king's mother, when she saw that the affairs of Izates' kingdom were in peace, and that her son was a happy man and admired among all men, and even among foreigners, by the means of God's providence over him, she had a mind to go to the city of Jerusalem in order to worship at that temple of God which was so very famous among all men, and to offer her thank offerings there. So she desired her son to give her leave to go thither, upon which he gave his consent to what she desired very willingly, and made great preparations for her dismission, and gave her a great deal of money, and she went down to the city Jerusalem, her son conducting her on her journey a great way. Now her coming was a very great advantage to the people of Jerusalem, for whereas a famine did oppress them at that time, and many people died for want of what was necessary to procure food withal, Queen Helena sent some of her servants to Alexandria with money to buy a great quantity of corn and others of them to Cyprus, to bring a cargo of dried figs. And as soon as they were come back, and had brought those provisions, which was done very quickly, she distributed food to those that were in want of it, and left a most excellent memorial behind her of this benefaction, which she bestowed on our whole nation. And when her son Izates was informed of this famine, he sent great sums of money to the principal men in Jerusalem. End quote. Thus did Queen Helene and her family support and sustain Jerusalem. Here we might note some of the wonderful descriptions about this queen in the Talmud, which highlights her devotion to celebrating and observing Judaism. Thus we are told how in Sukkot both the queen and her sons had their own holiday huts. And then there are descriptions of her generosity to the temple. Most moving of all is the Talmudic telling of a golden chandelier the queen donated. It hung from the temple entrance, and we are told, when the sun rose, its rays refracted off the exquisite ornament, thereby informing everyone assembled that the time had arrived to recite the morning liturgy of the Shema. We must unpack the poetry of this description. The sun was worshipped in so many pagan societies as a divinity, but not in Jerusalem. And a woman, a queen, who had embraced Jerusalem's faith, honored the temple of Jerusalem's God, so that the sun's light glorified it and the religion it proclaimed. The sun's rays reminding all assembled in the temple to proclaim the Shema, the words that summarize the creed that this royal woman had made her own. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Thus, to discover the palace of a once Gentile queen who came to live in the city of David is to see how Second Temple Jerusalem was in its last decades a source of striking inspiration to some who had originally lived far away from Jerusalem, who came to commune with the God who dwelled in Jerusalem and with the Jews of Jerusalem. It is therefore painfully ironic that the AP article with which I began describes the dig in the parking lot that uncovered the palace as quote-unquote controversial, as if the excavation of the history of Jerusalem is itself something that should be seen as a matter of controversy, as if exposing the great history of the Jews in Jerusalem should be a source of controversy. And the discovery of the palace of this extraordinary convert queen thus emphasizes the painful irony. Today, there are so many that challenge the Jewish right to Jerusalem, that challenge the Jewish roots in Jerusalem, so many that challenge the Jewish right to engage in archaeology in Jerusalem. Whereas archaeology in Jerusalem not only reveals the millennia-long history of Jewish Jerusalem, it also uncovers for us the story of a woman who was born far away from Jerusalem, in a people very different from that of the Jews of Jerusalem, who ultimately moved from her kingdom in order to pay homage to the Jewish right to Jerusalem, building her own palace in the site of David's city in order to say, in the words of David's own ancestor Ruth, Amech Ami v'Elokayech Elokai, your people will be my people, and your God my God. The light of the golden ornament of Queen Helene that flashed from atop the Temple Mount is no more, but her memory lives on, her legacy celebrated in rabbinic literature to this day. And as we imagine the rays of Jerusalem's sunrise informing all that the time had come to give glory to God, we remember the Queen who sought so profoundly to glorify the God of Jerusalem, thereby inspiring ourselves to see Jerusalem today as she once did. This is Meir Soloveitchik, looking forward to learning together tomorrow. Signing off.